This is Whitetail Rendezvous Podcast with Bruce Hutchin, episode number 032. Welcome to Whitetail Rendezvous Podcast, where it is all about whitetail deer hunting tips, techniques, and the stories so you can become a more successful whitetail deer hunter. And now your host, Bruce Hutchin.
We're heading up to Pound, Wisconsin today, just north of Green Bay, to talk to Doug Kostreva. Doug is the owner of Horny Buck Seed. To Doug, it's all about the freshest seed. The mixture of blends put together here at Horny Buck Seed Company are specially selected to aid in the following: assisting antler growth, provides a good source of nutrition and protein for bucks, does, and fawns throughout the year, and also provides some food for other critters. It aids in patterning all wildlife. If you're going to put out a food plot, the rule of thumb, you get out of it what you put into it.
Welcome to Whitetail Rendezvous. And we're going to welcome Doug Kostreva. Is that right, Doug?
Yep, Doug Kostreva.
From Horny Buck Seed Company up in Wisconsin. Doug's just an amazing guy, and I'm so happy to welcome him to our community today. Doug, welcome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being on your show, and thanks for having me.
Doug, let's talk about your company for a little bit. Just give us about a couple of minutes of your seed company, why you started it, and then we'll go from there.
Well, it started many, many years ago, back in the 80s. I'm a third-generation farmer, living on the same farm my grandparents built in 1917. Back in the early 80s, there was no such thing as a food plot. As a farmer, we grew crops, and very rarely did you leave crops for your deer. Sometimes they maybe weren't ripe, so you left them, and a deer got to eat them during the winter. In alfalfa, you left, so with winter, you leave a little bit taller, so the deer would be in it eating. And as things started to progress, we started to find out that if we did leave corn because it was maybe too ripe to put in a bin, it wasn't ripe enough to put in a bin. It was a little too wet. We leave it for the winter. We found out the deer would migrate towards it. And we've noticed the next year we would have, you know, better deer volume, because deer are very ritualistic. They remember where their food source was from the year before. So my very first thing I've ever planted, which was crazy enough to say, was carrots. And my dad said I was absolutely insane nuts for doing it because his carrot seed was so expensive in the day, which it still is today. And I went and I kind of dug them up a little bit, and the deer came and started eating them. And then I started putting more and more food plots in. I started trying different things. At the time, there was no, brassicas weren't big. This wasn't big. You know, there wasn't that such thing as a radish or turnip even in those days, or even you just never grew that for deer. But then I started planting several different things, and as the market started to go, I just only did it for myself. Then I ended up, had a landscaping company. I started up a landscaping company, and I was doing that, and I started planting for some of my customers who had their weekend warrior cabins, because I live 50 miles north of Green Bay. So we are kind of like we call vacation land. So a lot of people have their weekend warriors. They come up, they have their cabins on lakes or else on their properties, and they wanted to have deer in their backyard. So as I put their lawn in for their cabin, they asked if I could plant something so they could watch wildlife. And that's really how this all kind of came to plan. So it's more by accident, but like you just said, it's not, there's no such thing as an accident. It happened for a reason. And the good Lord up above is the one that kind of geared me in this direction. And we started up the seed company just basically by putting things together to make it work for people, to help people to grow deer.
Doug, let's switch it up now and talk about your love for deer hunting. Tell us how you got started on that.
I think I was very blessed to have a very hunting family. My father took me hunting as way back as long as I can remember. And I know as a kid, I know there's no kid that can sit still. There's no kid that is that great in a deer stand, but he would always try to figure out a way to make time to take me somehow, some way. And back when I was, you know, a young kid many years ago, there was not a lot of deer. There was that thing called party tags, and you were only allowed to shoot one doe amongst five people, and bucks were very small. I mean, anything with 3 inches, if they had 3-inch spikes in Wisconsin, that was legal game, and you shot it, because if they had, there just was not a lot of deer. But as time has kind of progressed, and I think it's nationwide now, people are getting a lot more into the deer management end of it, so to speak, especially if they have enough land where they can hold and harbor deer. You know, deer can live on, you can keep deer on 16 acres. You know, it can happen. It's not that hard. If they got a water source, a bedding source, and a food source, they will stay there. You're going to have your roamers, but you're going to still have a lot of deer that are going to stay tight. It's providing that 60 acres is their house. It's no different than your own home. You stay out of their home, and they will feel comfortable moving around in your house. If you go into their house and start bumping up and, you know, moving deer or going into their bedding area or putting up cameras and checking them every day, you are on their time and their territory. They get a little skittish, especially the older deer. Them are the ones that you are trying to kill. So, you know, there's a lot to this, but yet it's very simple. But people can make it so difficult, if that makes sense. But that is really how we, as I started hunting, I got into, learning techniques and how to do them. And it all started from a little kid on, and my son is only 8 and my daughter's 10. My son is into hunting big time, and it's probably no different than I was as a kid. I had a BB gun, and I was shooting everything I could see, and he's in the same boat. So we're very blessed.
Thank you for that. You mentioned lessons learned. Let's talk about a couple of lessons you learned, one as a young man, two, that when you're going to college or you're working the farm, so you're 18 to 20-ish and then into your 30s, three different times, three different age brackets, but what lessons did you take out of those periods of time?
I think if there was getting back to the deer hunting end of it, as I grew older, when you're a kid, you think you know everything. And I think that goes to all kids out today. And I was no different than any other kid. When I first started bow hunting, I was maybe 16 years old, and I thought that deer were, you know, big, brown, and dumb. To find out that between their nose and their eyes, they will outfox anybody, especially an older doe. And then as I got older, you know, you try to outsmart them, but, you know, always remember they got a sixth sense too, and they're always one step ahead of you. So as I got to be an older hunter now, I started to not overpressure deer, and I started to do things a little bit differently on my food plots, or I always try to get them in transition areas. I don't hunt food plots a lot. I just don't. I try to get them in a transition area. So, A, they don't see you get up in a stand, and B, they don't see you get down from a stand. I try to get them in their areas where they're going to be moving from their bedding area to their food plot area. That way I'm not disturbing the food plot, and I don't hunt day after day in the same stand. I watch wind direction. You learn as you get older to become a better hunter and more successful hunter, that is. But it all comes back down to growing the deer, keeping the deer on your property, nutritional value, minerals, water, bedding. There's everything that coincides with each other to help you become a successful hunter.
How do you identify a transitional area in northern Wisconsin, just north of, you know, of Green Bay, and I believe it's Highway 24.
What I do, I turn off the 64. It actually is. Here's what I do. You know, I try to figure out, where are the deer bedding? Where are the deer going to be feeding? Where is my water source? Where can I put my mineral? I always try to put stands up for predominantly northwest winds. The rule of thumb, that is your number one wind. You start getting into September, October. It is what it is. That's just the way the winds blow, the way the jet stream is. That's the way it kind of seems to work for me. I try to transition them so that I am at least, 50 to 100 yards off of the food plot. The reason why I try to get a little bit further off the food plot is your bigger dominant deer, your 3.5, your 4.5 year old buck, rule of thumb, will not come out and hit the plots, in the daylight. They do sometimes, so don't get me wrong, especially if you don't disturb them much. But rule of thumb, they are moving in the dusk, but you can still shoot them. But they will come and they'll get within, 40, 50 yards of a food plot, and they'll stand there and wait until it's dark, and they see enough of their associates out there. If there's other deer out there that maybe will make them feel a little bit more at ease, But, you know, I've watched deer. I love watching deer, and I watch deer how they react. And I have stands in the woods, and I watch how they come. And if they, especially I had some bucks that were 4.5 years old, and they were maybe pretty hungry. They came out to check the plot, and they wouldn't go out on a plot because there was no deer out on that plot. And they would sit there and watch and watch and watch. And as soon as a doe or a couple fawns came out and maybe another little doe or maybe another little buck, then they're like, ah, you know what? I can go out now because, you know what, if there was some harm, they would have been in danger by now. So it's all about getting them deer to relax, to give them that warm, fuzzy feeling, and that's how I go about hunting.
You mentioned a buck will hang up or wait 40, 50, possibly even 60 yards off a field, depending on the terrain. If he's got a nice ridge, he can look down into the field, the food plot. He can do it from further than that if the timber's open. Do you have a name for that area? I've heard people say, you know, hunt the fringe and staging areas. What do you call that place that they wait?
I just call it a transition area. I guess whatever makes you happy. You can call it a lot of different things, but me, it's always a transition area. It's moving from the bedding area to the feeding area. And you can call it a staging area is a great name for it. All the same word, I'll say meaning just different words. So, food plot, and there's a difference between a food plot and a kill plot. That's another thing too that people don't realize, even though they're the same thing, but yet they're different. A kill plot is usually something that's a half acre or less. That means it's not going to harbor many deer. It's going to be very secluded. They're going to feel secluded, especially if that, half acre, quarter acre is surrounded by woods and trees. They're going to feel a little bit more seclusion. It's going to be a little bit more of your area where they're going to maybe hit a little bit earlier. They're going to feel a little bit because they can feel the danger. They can see, they just feel a little bit more secluded in their area to go and hit that. That is a kill plot. That is a place where a lot of guys like to put their stands on a small little plot, shoot deer off the plot. And I don't tell people how to hunt. I don't care how you hunt. If it works for you, because what might work for me might not work for you or the next guy or the next guy. Everybody is going to be different. It doesn't matter who you are. Everybody's going to hunt different. They're going to have different success ratios. They're going to have different deer, and I've hunted several different states, and I have realized that whitetails are whitetails, but they're all different in their area. Every one of them is different. They have different temperaments. They have different ways of being. I have some places where the deer are not even that afraid of humans, and I have places where you can't get 200 yards from a deer. It depends on the area. So, getting back to the kill plot, and then you got a food plot. Food plot rule of thumb to me is over 2 acres. Anything that's 2 acres and over, that is a food plot, which means you're going to grow. The three main words that I've learned in deer and in keeping deer is three words: groceries, groceries, groceries. The more food you can give them, the more food you have for them. Them deer subconsciously know that food source is there, and especially in northern Wisconsin here, when you start getting snow, it gets cold, it's below zero, they need a food source. And the more you can grow, they mentally will come and they will, herd in that area because they know they will always have a food source. Anything carbs and sugars is what they need to keep their fat on and to keep their rumen going in their stomach, so they are putting on fat and keeping warm, basically.
Let's just recap. I've been taking notes feverishly here. There's a food plot that's over 2 acres. There's a kill plot, or I've heard it referred to as a micro plot, that's a half acre to a quarter acre. Mm-hmm. And the key to bringing in mature deer is to give them a sense of security, give them confidence that nobody's going to see them, and groceries, groceries, groceries. You got to feed deer, or deer want carbs and sugars. Does that summarize that for our listeners?
Well, in the fall months, in the summer months, in the springtime, like right now. Okay, here's where the big transition that people don't understand. Spring is just and summer are more crucial for deer than in the fall. And where I'm getting at is deer this in the springtime are coming off the winter. They need a good source of mineral. Mineral is so crucial. I'm blessed to work with a lot of different deer farms throughout the Midwest. Now I know a lot of guys are like, oh, it's a deer farm, it's a pen. Hey, listen, I don't care how you hunt. I don't care what you hunt. I don't care. I'm not a judge, jury, and trial. I have guys that hunt and preserve, and you know what? God bless them. They're hunting. And the problem with the society today is they throw deer farmers under the bus. And the real reason is a lot of them is they just can't afford to go there, or they just don't want to go there. That's their choice. But I'll tell you what, I know there's preserves out there that I hunt. I don't hunt on, but I go and I help. And there is deer in there that is how bad it has gotten, okay? Them deer are so secluded, they have, you know, there's 400 acres, okay? And I'll tell you right, a lot of them are fenced in, but them deer are in there, and they're secluded. It's hard to hunt them. But getting back to the deer farm, I learned a lot from them. Whitetails are whitetails, whether they're in a fence or they're out in the wild. I learned what they need. Antler growth, what do they need? It all starts with the does and the fawns. Your healthier your fawns are born, the better off they're going to be long term. Your does, they need mineral, selenium, things for their milk. When the fawns are sucking, they're getting all the nutrition, all the microorganisms, all of the things that they need to grow to help with the antibodies to fight bacteria, to fight infections, to fight diseases. The healthier your doe fawns are and your buck fawns are, the next year, the bigger they're going to be. Mineral plays such a big key in the health. And protein. Springtime, they need protein. They don't need carbs in the spring. They don't need to worry about fat structure in the spring. They need beans. They need alfalfa. They need clovers. They need things that are high, high, high in protein. Protein is health. Healthier the deer is, the bigger the antler gets. The calmer they are. I got different, in our mineral, we got some things that lower the blood, that lowers their blood temperature. Anything that gets in our blood to flow to keep them healthy. The healthier you are, the healthier the deer are, the bigger they grow. And it gets back down to stress level. The lower your deer is stressed, heat is a high stress problem for them. Coyotes, wolves, bears, I mean, you know, humans, anything that you can keep deer alone, you leave deer alone, leave them in their home, and like I said, back to the food, mineral, and a bedding area, they will grow so much better and so much bigger, and everybody's all about want a big rack. That is what they're looking to shoot, and I respect that. But it's not always about the antlers. It's about the maturity of the deer. I try to tell people, you know, it's hard to pass sometimes on a fork and a spike if that's all you think you're going to see. But, you know, there's always that chance that you're not going to kill them. And you know what? Maybe the neighbor won't see them either. And then next year they might end up being, you know, a nice 8-pointer at 2.5-year-old. Now, you sit there and you think of that 8-pointer at a 3.5 and a 4.5, and all of a sudden it's a 10 and with a 20-inch spread, and it's, you know, it's going to make a, you know, 160, 170-inch deer. You know, that's what everybody's dream is, but it starts with the fawns. It starts with getting them off to a good start. It starts with letting them go to let them grow. You know, I got a lot of guys who are like, well, if I don't shoot, my neighbor's going to kill them. You know what? Try to work with your neighbor. I know neighbors, I get it. There's a jealousy thing. It brings out the worst. Whitetails bring out the worst in neighbors. I don't get it. But, you know, it's hard to work together. And you know what? Until you're genuinely proud for somebody for what they kill, it's hard to really make it focus on yourself, on what you really are trying to accomplish. And back to that 16 acres, like I always tell everybody, you can keep deer on your property. And it's the only time you're going to get your roamers. But if you leave their bedding area alone, and they got a food source, and they got a water source, I'll tell you right now, deer do not like to roam like everybody thinks they do. They just don't. It's a proven fact. 80% of all deer want our homebody. They just are. You know, bucks are going to travel when it's breeding time. Understandable. But then again, sometimes they don't like, they come, the minute there's danger or they know they're in danger, what's the first thing they do? They go to their happy place, their safe haven, their home where they know they can go and nobody bothers them. And deer do not need to eat for a week at a time. but they need to drink every 3 days. That's just the way they're genetically made up. So deer can sit down and they can sit tight for 7 days and not even move. If they can just go up and get a drink of water out of a puddle, they will stay in a certain area for the whole time. And I learned that from deer farms and how they're hunted and how it works. Right? And that's where I get all my information from. Not just off of, you know, off of, from hunters, but I learned from deer biologists and how they track their deer, you know, they collar them. So that's how you learn transition areas and how deer move and what's their, and not every deer is the same, but they're genetically made up to be a certain way. And that is rule of thumb, the 80% that are going to act that way. You know, sorry if I ramble, but that's just how it works for me.
Can we just touch upon what you said? Spring and summer is the most crucial time because the does are feeding and then weeding their fawns off. So at that point in time, they need a diet of high protein. In the fall, for energy, carbs, and sugar. Is that basically the foundation we're looking at?
That is, the rule of thumb, that is the best way to put it. The proteins, they don't need fat content in the summer. In fact, you know, deer are not, you know, they'll eat corn all year round. And that's another thing, too, that people don't understand about deer and rumens. You know, God created deer to be browsers. They are a browser. They are made to eat a little bit here, a little bit there. Where cattle have the same stomach structure, but they're grazers. They eat everything in their sight. They just mow it and go. Deer, but they have the same type of stomachs. Now, cattle, if you would feed them pure corn, and you get them on pure corn, the corn will kill in their stomach, in the rumen, will kill all of the good bugs and bacteria that's in their stomach. And believe it or not, cattle will die of straight corn. So deer are no different. They need a roughage along with their corn in the fall. That is why I overstress on your radishes, your turnips. Like our Dead Zone blend is phenomenal for winter. Checkmate, it's got some grasses. So it's got the oats and the peas, and it's got the winter rye, and it's got turnips in it. So it's got the greens along with the grasses. It's all roughage. It helps to break down and metabolize. That's why when I create when our company, I always try to put blends. Everything is blended, and it's all about. It's kind of like you go into a restaurant, and when you go to a restaurant, you know, sometimes you might be in a mood for one thing, but you go to that same restaurant, you might be in a mood for something different. I want my plots to be that restaurant of variety. I mean, some nights they might come in, they might want to eat alfalfa. The next night they might come in, they want to eat clover. The next night they might come in, they might want to eat turnip, or they might want to eat chicory, or they might want to eat radishes. Variety, variety, variety. The more variety you have in your food plot or your food system, the more deer it will harbor, because every day they're going to crave something different. You know, I mean, I can't overemphasize that. It's no different in the fall when it starts to freeze up here. Deer are not into the alfalfa. They don't need protein. Their body mentally knows. They need carbs. They need sugar. They need to put fat on. They might be in the acorns like crazy. They might be, you know, in the cornfields or in the ripe beans. They're going to be eating what their body knows they need for carbs and sugars. Now, beans are a high source of protein, probably by far one of the best blends or best things that a deer can eat, just because they're getting the best of both worlds, protein and carbs. The corn is more of a high carb, high starch, turns to fat. It is a great food source. I still put some corn in on my food plot areas where I'm feeding them for the winter. I'll put in a couple acres of corn and leave it for them. But I also have my Dead Zone, which has got the radishes and it's got the sugar beets in it. And I got some kale in there, and it's got different things that's going to be palatable to them, to their system, so they can eat the corn and they can eat the greens. And if you plant it young later in the year where it's going to be prime when it freezes, it's going to stay green all winter, and they will eat it all winter long, dig through the snow just to gobble it up. And it's because that's what their body needs.
Doug, we're getting to the point in the show. I know you've been sharing. I heard some of your blends and everything, but here's the time. You get a couple of minutes. We're wrapping up the show, so you can talk to our listeners about specifics about Horny Buck Seed Company.
Okay.
And anything else you want to share.
Well, a couple of things. We own a company that is called Horny Buck Seed Company. We are on hornybuckseed.com. And if you are really are true want to get started, or you want, are you looking for a great seed, you can go there and find it. We do ship it. If you're looking to do one thing we didn't touch on real quickly is soil testing. Before you put your plot in, please do a soil test. I don't care if you do it at your local co-op. If you want soil test kits, just email me at Doug at Horny Buck Seed, and I will get you some mailed out to you. They're $18 when you send them in to the company. But I'll tell you right now, you got to know where your pH is, and you got to know, you got to do weed kill, and we can touch on that maybe in another segment. But there's so much more to than just planting. There is about ground prep and how to do it, and how is the best way to do it, and how to do your best pH, and there's all these things to touch on. But if you have any other questions, you can email me at Doug@hornybuckseed.com, and I will get to them the best I can. Otherwise, if there are any other questions, we do have some pro staff on there. You can also email them, and they will get back to you. We're all about trying to be customer service. We want you to succeed, because if you fail, we fail. So the more I can teach you, the more I can teach people, the more they learn, the more successful they're going to be. And it's all about, putting your money, your hard-earned money, and doing it correctly. Because you know what? There's so much more than just, well, I'm going to throw this down and hope it works. I don't believe in poke and holding. I believe in doing it correctly.
I've got the whole page of notes here, and I hope our listeners heard what Doug was saying this morning about growing a healthy herd. Yes, we all like to shoot. We've got dreams of shooting, 160 side bucks. In reality, they're out there, but will we ever see them? Maybe we will, maybe we won't. But the biggest takeaway that I'm looking at here is that you have to know how to take care of your herd. If you do that, as Doug said, 16 acres, you can have a huntable herd.
Absolutely, and it all starts with mineral. Look up our Booner Max mineral. It's on our Horny Buck Seed page. Mineral, and we are shipping it by the ton literally throughout the whole United States. I got so many guys on it. On an average right now, I got guys in the wild that are using it that are showing me their sheds, and they're averaging anywhere from 30 to 40 inches of growth in the 3 to 4.5 year old buck. And we have the sheds to prove it. And this is out in the wild. This is not in a pen. In a pen, we're shooting, we're growing, 180 inch year and a half old. So, I mean, I get a lot of information back to that pen. I'm telling you what, support your deer farmers, back them, even though you don't believe in hunting that way. But I'll tell you right now, they do a lot of research. They do a lot of things to help out the deer herd as far as what to do. I use a lot of information they give me. And I'll tell you right now, it is a wealth of information for you. These people grow deer, even though they're in a pen. You're also growing deer out in the wild. You know what? It's the same but different. It's just, fair chase versus, in a pen. But I'll tell you right now, there's a lot of wealth of information out there, and I learned from some of the best. And I'll tell you right now, we have some of the best products out there. I know that, bar none.
Doug, on behalf of the Whitetail Rendezvous community, thank you. And I can't wait till we get you back on the show. You're a kick. Everybody, thank you for joining us today, and may all your hunts be great ones. Thank you again.
As your host at Whitetail Rendezvous, I want to thank each and every one of you for spending your time with us today. I look forward to sharing with you in the next episode more whitetail hunting tips, techniques, and stories. Until then, keep the sun at your back, the wind in your face, and always be patient.
If you have any tips, comments, or suggestions, or what we can do to improve, because we're here to serve you, let us know. Thanks for listening to Whitetail Rendezvous Podcast at www.whitetailrendezvous.com.